Rocket Penguins! Here we go!
Welcome to Behind the Sins, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, your weekly look at all things CinemaSins, TV Sins, and commercial sins. I'm your host, Aaron, but not that Aaron, of course. And this week, I'm joined by CinemaSins co-founder, Jeremy Scott.
Hello, everybody.
This is a fun week because in the past, since the last episode at least was recorded, I think, and dropped, because I would have dropped on Thursday. That was the official 10-year anniversary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. On the 12th of December is when that milestone was hit.
It's a big milestone. And
it's not small. I've been pondering it quite a bit, to be honest. So.
Sure. Well, congrats. It seemed to be like a pretty joyous day, at least from the people that I saw on Twitter.
Indeed, it was, and thank you very much.
Staff and fans alike, I know there was a lot of love from a lot of different people, so that was fun.
Yeah.
I wanted to start off the show. I had two questions that were asked. I figured we can do this at the top of the show real quick. I got a DM from Oversoul Gaming on Twitter, and he wanted to know for the Avatar recent if the team chose to do the theatrical or the extended version, and what goes into the decision behind doing one or the other?
Well, I would say I'm almost positive we did the theatrical both times. We'd send Avatar. And I think we would always choose theatrical, except for that. I'm sure there's one wild exception that I'm not thinking of. Like, I don't know. It'll come to me later. If we were ever to do Apocalypse Now, I think we would have a serious decision on our hands, because there are multiple favorite cuts of that movie that are wildly different lengths. But in general, what we're trying to do is nitpick the same experience you would have had in the theater. Now, we have accidentally sinned extended cuts before, because way back in the day when it was just me and Chris, you know, he would go to Best Buy to buy Blu-rays and rip them, and I would get them on Amazon. And every now and then I would get like a foreign market version, or the file name would just not look proper or would be in the wrong order. And I think there's like two movies in the first couple years where we sinned the extended director's cut instead of the theatrical, but it was a total accident. But I think 9 times out of 10, given the choice, we'll go theatrical.
Sure. Most of the time it doesn't really matter anyway. I didn't even know Avatar had an extended cut, because that movie is already way too long.
It's pretty extended.
Yeah. And then Nick also had a question about the 10-year recents, and he wanted to know, he watches the 10-year recents, like the original video, when he watches the recents, and he just wanted to know if there was any fun analytics of, like, are you seeing a spike in, you know, for example, last week was Avatar. Did you see a spike with the original Avatar video, or is it just one extra view?
That's an interesting example. We did, but it's hard to differentiate in that case how much of that is because people are comparing them and how much of that is because there's a new Avatar movie in theaters.
Sure.
So people are already searching and watching Avatar-related content more than normal. But yes, I think almost every one of them has given a bump to the original one. And I'm sure it's people like Nick that are just kind of comparing the two. There's somebody that posts, maybe this is him, somebody that posts on the subreddit almost every time, some thoughts comparing the original version to the new recent version. So that's a happy bonus. We weren't like, let's do the Dark Knight Rises 10-year anniversary so that the original Dark Knight Rises can get a boost. Whatever we ended up choosing, the original probably would have gotten a boost.
Sure.
So we just went with 10 of our biggest, earliest.
It's interesting. I don't know how Nick does it. I haven't done it, but like, they're wildly different videos.
Oh, yeah.
Like, especially like The Dark Knight Rises was the second or third overall. That was back when it was like essentially just stills. And then,
yeah,
the way the videos were put together was so different.
Yeah, the narration is less human and more stilted delivery, higher pitch, much faster tempo. And then all the sins were short sentences. These days, if we want to say three paragraphs about a moment, we'll say three paragraphs about that moment. But back then, we were absolutely obsessed with the idea of keeping these things as short as possible.
Sure. Well, that's all I had. There will be plenty more to talk about as we go throughout the content of this week. So let's dive into this inside scoop.
What's he building in there?
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
This is the true story.
We'll kick things off with Monday's video, House of the Dragon. We are finally doing the last two episodes of this season for Monday and Wednesday's video. You seem to be relatively underwhelmed with the show, but I think we talked before the show had wrapped up. I mean, is that still kind of the case?
Yeah, I think it's well acted. I think it's visually pretty stunning. I just don't know if we're going to be telling any new stories that weren't told in Game of Thrones. There's even a joke. I think this is episode 9. There's even a joke in the Sins video about, because they show a bastard child with bleach blonde hair, and the sin is, oh yes, the old King Robert strategy. Maybe one of them will grow up to be an underutilized plot device, because we've seen, you know, this person's bastard dangling as a plot thread already in Game of Thrones. We've seen incest already in Game of Thrones. We've seen dragons. And so for me, maybe I'm just not as interested in spending more time in this world as everybody else is. I think for a lot of folks, the ending of Game of Thrones was so dissatisfying that this show comes along and is of quality, and it's easier to embrace because it feels like this one at least knows where it's going and where it's going to end and when it's going to stop. And that was a lot of words to say, yeah, I ended up still pretty underwhelmed with the show, despite I think it being well-crafted.
Are you coming back for season 2?
Probably. I don't know. We'll see what I really am trying to be. I don't do resolutions because if I want to change something about my life, I don't want to wait a whole calendar year to do it. I figure I should just do it. But something I am hoping to do more of in this coming year is watch these shows that I know to be great that I just haven't seen yet. Like, I haven't seen a single episode of Stranger Things. And I have heard from enough people in my life that I trust that I am pretty confident I'm going to enjoy that show, if not love it. And if I had, I'm making this choice today, I think I would rather say I'm probably going to go into Stranger Things rather than coming back to House of the Dragon season 2. But then they'll do some amazeballs thing in episode 6 of season 2 that everybody will be like, you have to watch the first 5 episodes. But they'll do one of those hold the door, Hodor moments. Do you watch Game of Thrones? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'll get compelled to be sucked back into the show because when HBO... not just Game of Thrones, but man, when they have those moments, they freaking nail them. That Hold the Door episode blew my freaking mind.
I think I stand by the Westworld season 1 finale is maybe the best episode of TV ever. You're right. When HBO hits their moments, they hit them.
They really do.
I like that resolution. Trying to dive into like a back catalog as opposed to like I think there it, like FOMO kind of goes both ways. Like it could be fear of missing out of stuff in the present or fear of missing out of like people that have never seen The Wire. Like, right. You should watch The Wire because it's remarkable.
Right.
I know you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, yeah, like I recently just decided like movie TVs and video games, I really only have time for the two. And it just kind of fluctuates with two I'm spending time on. And it, for the last like 2 years, it hasn't been TV. So I'm just like, I'm just going to like concede and not really be a TV person anymore.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to watch the things that I care about and that's it.
That's where I'm trying to go is not stick with something that isn't really impressing me in the hopes that it improves and moving on to something that, you know, I just never got to, but I know is really high quality.
Right. And there's no reason for me, like, I don't necessarily need to see everything that comes out anymore. And it's like kind of along your argument, like I've never seen The West Wing and it's been on my queue for forever. So I feel like I should watch The West Wing, you know, should be a little bit more important for me to watch than House of the Dragon season 2. So I like that.
I feel like if you go into The West Wing cold today, you're just going to get pissed about how Washington actually is, because that show gives you hope in our politicians. And that is just a dangerous thing to have.
Well, I've already seen Newsroom. So like,
yes. Okay. So I guess same thing for journalists there.
Yeah. I also like, right around the start of COVID, I started like rewatching things because I was like, there's so many new things to watch. I'm not going to rewatch old things. And I was like, yeah, but I want to rewatch things too. So
yeah,
now I'm like, I just want to replay the Batman Arkham trilogy, even though I played it like a year and a half ago. I also did Scrubs right at the start of COVID again. And like, I'm already itching for another rewatch. Like Scrubs is my Frasier or Seinfeld or Friends.
Sure. You know, sure. You. Yeah. I think it is for a lot of people just a couple years behind me in terms of like when I was a senior. How old are you? Late 30s? Mid 30s?
I'm 27.
Son of a bitch.
I know. I'm bald. So like.
Then you actually probably didn't. Did you watch Scrubs in its original run then? Or did you kind of come to it in reruns?
No. I think it was reruns. Like, I think it would have been on, but like I was probably too young for it. I think I watched it in full in high school. And okay. I think it was at, like right as it ended.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was not like an original run for me.
I was not assuming your age based on your hairline. I was assuming your age based on like how freely you are able to discuss pop culture and movies and references and things like that. You don't seem like you've crammed a lot into 27 years.
I'll take that. I also like grew up, I didn't really grow up in the age of podcasts because I feel like people younger than me are. But like I was in high school when podcasts really took a boom. So like part of that too is listening to, I think the first Sincast episode I listened to was the March Madness bracket, like the first episode of that. Like, and then I did a back catalog of that too. And it's like, you guys talk about so much there. And then, you know, also, you know, Sif Pop stuff, you know, with Dicer and throwing Beyond the Sin or Behind the Sins, you know, the first two seasons, like, you know, there's plenty of stuff to talk about. And
yep.
So back to House of the Dragon then.
Yes, well, we did meander a bit, but
no shit, Allison, if you want to apply to join our team of pointing out the obvious, we'll happily send you a raven. Like, that's just a fun way of like, it's kind of almost Allison would be good at TV Sins, but it's almost like you would be a good intern at TV Sins.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are some of the stuff you have?
I already did, read my old King Robert strategy one about the bastard child being an underutilized plot device. I also really laughed at the one making fun of Viserys. I don't know if it's Viserys or Viserys the Peaceful, and how that name is really lame and it's almost as bad as Bran the Broken. And then he goes, "I said almost." those jokes always make me laugh. And those are the only two I wrote down from this episode. But although there were several chuckles, I was just trying to make sure I had a few jokes to give praise about for each of these.
Yeah. And I don't think I mentioned it earlier, Aaron and Daniel writing on this script.
Mm-hmm.
I love if Otto ends up being named Odor because he can only say Odor for the rest of his life, I will give every sin back. And then there was the royal fanfare at the start of the crowning scene, and Aaron, as the narrator, like tries to go into a royal skip, and then he's just like, "Oh wait, hold on, force I have it," and so he just has to stop. Show takes this long to realize that what I actually meant when I wanted to see a crowning scene. I was shocked when I saw that Danae wasn't on the script, and I saw that in there. I was like, okay,
so. That does kind of sound like a joke that she influenced or would write for sure.
Yeah, and maybe she was the review. I don't know. And then I love, this is one of my new favorite, I think it's starting to be a running joke in the TV Sins. I don't know if it's made its way to Simpsons, but where it starts off with the awe and then it turns into you. So you look so much like your mother in certain lights. I just love that delivery.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I don't remember when the first one that was. We played around with that a lot, though. It starts cute and then turns gross like that. Aww. Those are always fun to narrate.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't have any questions about the script, but I did pull a comment from YouTube.
Excellent.
Cairo Arena says, I am now unnecessarily mad that I have missed all the shadow puppet videos because it says that they do shadow puppet videos on Tuesdays. That was great.
Oh, man.
That just hit me right in the giggles. So I didn't have anything else. I mean, if you had notes or comments from Aaron and Daniel or anyone...
No, I did not go out for notes to anyone because I was a slacker. I was entertaining my brother and not thinking about BTS, and didn't even realize until this morning that I still hadn't looked at the show notes. And so, listener at home, blame me.
That doesn't make you a slacker. It makes you a good family member.
Well, yes. I appreciate you putting that positive spin on that for me. Yeah. I appreciate that.
We're all good. We still get to talk about the videos and talk about things as they come up. So that's all we're really here to do. So that's all I had for this video. You ready to move on to CinemaSins?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Tuesday's video, Jurassic World Dominion. Jonathan and Ian writing on this one.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's terrible.
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't seen this movie. And I haven't seen the Sins video. This is the only one I didn't get to. I have been told that even watching the Sins video will enrage me at how bad this movie. I hated the last Jurassic World movie. Hated. And most people found something to like in that movie. So this is one of those where I have narrated an entire Sins video and I don't know what really anyone's talking about. And it sounds ridiculous. It sounds like a very terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
And does it end with the dinosaurs and humans just sharing the world?
Yes and no. That's how the last movie ended, Fallen Kingdom.
Well, exactly. But I assume they were going to at least fight for a while after that got started. And then
they immediately kill that.
Oh.
And all the dinosaurs are on some remote island that is completely controlled by some corporation, and the corporation owns the rights. It's Biosyn, which is owned by Dotson, or ran by Dotson from the first movie. And so he has all the rights to the dinosaurs' DNA stuff. And so he has them all on this remote island, or at least remote area of this continent or whatever. And so all the dinosaurs are gathered in one place. I'm sure you can tell what's going to happen. Although it doesn't happen in the way you think it's going to happen. It's much stupider than that.
It's just yet another series that has damned itself by insisting on ties to the past and legacy characters returning and keeping everything. Like, the fact that Dotson is even in this freaking movie annoys me. I was already annoyed that Sam Neill and Laura Dern were back. We knew Jeff Goldblum was back from the last movie. I don't need any of that. That's not what I love about Jurassic Park. Why do they keep misunderstanding this?
I do actually, maybe once you, well, you, I don't think you should see the movie, but if you for some reason wind up catching it flipping channels and Showtime or HBO or whatever, like the actor that plays Dotson, I can't remember the actor's name right now, but he plays Richard Parker in the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
Oh, Campbell Scott?
Yes, him. That's his name.
Okay.
He's really good in this movie, and he's like arguably the best. The person you want to watch the most. He's great.
You still could have cast Campbell Scott and named him someone like Johnson. Like, it doesn't have to be a tie to a character from a legacy film. He could just hire a great actor and let him choose scenery.
I'm about to lose all my street credit here because actually Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is my second favorite Jurassic Park movie.
Well, that doesn't cause you to lose street cred unless you tell me you've seen all of the Jurassic Park movies.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I'm going to take a little bit of that. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, here's why. Because it's precisely what you're talking about, where you're saying like they don't need to try to do callbacks to the original. Like, I feel like Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is the only film that tries anything new in the franchise.
I will agree with that.
It's not a great movie, right? It's not perfect by any means, but I at least admire the attempt. And I think the cinematography is the best since the original in Fallen Kingdom. So I'm not saying it's a great movie, but I'm saying it's my second favorite Jurassic Park movie.
Okay, that's fair. I still think Lost World is my second favorite just because there's still so much Spielberg in that movie, even though it's overwrought and overlong and everything in San Diego can go, but there's even moments in San Diego that are like Spielberg signature moments. And then 3 comes along and is like, hey, remember Spielberg? I don't. This is nothing like what he does. So I can at least understand you saying that. I don't think that costs you any street cred. I thought you were going to say you've never seen the original or something like that. And then that probably would have cost a little.
No, I grew up, I watched the original a lot. I probably seen Jurassic Park 3 more than any of them because that was 2001. I was 6 at the time.
Oh, okay.
So I probably seen that one more than any of them. And look, it's not good. I don't think I've seen it for 15 years before, right before this movie came out. And it's not good, but you're right. Lost World is, it's got some touches of greatness and it really sucks most of the time. This film has no touches of greatness. It's just terrible the whole time. There's like a chase scene in Africa that is awesome. And that's about it. Like, there's a motorcycle chase like through the scenes and there are like raptors that are like on their scents. And it's very like Bourne Ultimatum-y.
Okay, I think I got glimpses of that in the trailer. I think I know what you're talking
about. That scene is awesome, and the rest of the movie can go to hell.
Right.
Because in this final movie of this, you know, the sixth movie of this franchise, the plot is about locusts eating crops, not about dinosaurs. So.
Yeah, that's what I also heard, is that we're not really dealing with dinosaurs as much as we are insects in this movie.
No, the dinosaors are inconsequential. They're just kind of around. So I thought the writers did a great job tackling this one because they talk about the villain's plan. So villain's plan is Campbell Scott, Dodson, is creating these locusts that are going to wipe out every crop that isn't made with seed made by Biosyn. So that's where Laura Dern and Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum wind up meeting at the big factory because they're, you know, wanting to be like, hey, we want Alan Grant's approval on this because that will mean something. And Jeff Goldblum is already like an in-house ethics person, which is all sorts of crazy. The narrator talks about the plan and he's just like, so how did you think that nobody was ever going to find out when all the crops are dead except for the ones that were made with Biosyn seed? You don't need evidence. Like, that is evidence.
Yeah, seriously.
And not only that, but like, you're not going to have enough crop to sustain the world, especially a world where there are dinosaurs roaming. So
no kidding.
It's all sorts of stupid.
That sounds like it deserves a Sins video.
Yeah, there's some really great things in this Sins video that happened, because like there are kind of, like you mentioned about The Lost World, like there's maybe a glimpse here or there where you're like, hold on, Campbell Scott's performance is great, I love him. Or like the chase scene in I think it's Mumbai, I could be wrong, maybe Morocco, one of the two. I'm sorry that people that actually care. But there's a chase sequence that's actually pretty good. So the narrator is going through this process. He's like, I really want to give a send off for this performance, but I just can't for this really terrible movie. And it's been really fun too, because talking with some of the Sins team, and you're like, yeah, we really wanted to give Sins off, but like we've gotten a little bit too loose with it in the past. And so like Ian wrote like 3 Sins off for Star Trek 5, and he's like, no, this movie can't get any Sins off. So I liked seeing the restraint there, where you're like, you don't have to include a sin removal in any movie or any
I mean,
cool thing.
If
like,
you put Dicer on a Pixar script, he's going to remove 10 to 15 sins before it goes through editing. That's just part of the DNA of who Dicer is.
Yeah, but Turning Red doesn't deserve 15 sins off, you know? So
I agree.
I was talking with somebody recently, because like it's nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards. I'm like, it's got to be, because like there's been nothing this year, right? Like, it's top 5 animated of the year, but there's like 2 good animated movies that have come out this year.
And only 6 total.
Right. So like, Turning Red's fine, right? But that's all. And I just really like how the narrator is like struggling. He's like, I really want to give a sin off, but I'm not. So instead I'm sending it for this stupid thing. and then there's a shot of Chris Pratt like doing a hand gesture to the dinosaur, which they send to High Holy Hell. That's good. A really stupid thing in this franchise, but there's the Sins says attempting to use the Force in the wrong Legacy sequel.
Ha!
And then the other Sin I wrote down. So at the end, there's the whole like they have the daughter clone thing that like she's like wanted by everybody, like, and she's Claire and whatever Owen are fugitives for housing her, and all of a sudden like she's revealed to the world because like that she's just survived this, you know, attack, and there's a bunch of news reporters there and all that, and so. This seems like a touching moment, but shortly after this, Owen and Claire were arrested for kidnapping a minor, and Maisie was sent to an orphanage where she was adopted and raised by Batman. Oh, wait, this is Universal, so she was adopted and raised by Dom Toretto, I guess. Get better, IP Universal. So then I also wrote a note, like, because there was a rumor a long time ago that they were trying to make a Fast and Furious and Jurassic World crossover movie. So, like, maybe this is the connecting bridge.
Interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't bat an eye with Dom Toretto taking down a dinosaur using a rocket motorcycle. I mean, at this point.
Why not, right?
Why not?
Both of these franchises are stupid at this point, so.
Yeah.
It also just brought back a wave of nostalgia, because as soon as I remember that, I'm like, oh, remember when they were going to do a 22 Jump Street sequel that was in the Men in Black universe?
Yeah. And yeah.
That would have been either cool or terrible, but yep. I'm going to say cool.
I mean, let's just believe it would have been cool, since we're not going to get it.
Sure.
But, I mean, if Lord and Miller were involved, I think it probably would have been good.
Yeah, but if they would have been involved, though, we wouldn't have gotten into the Spider-Verse. So, you know.
There you go. That's a trade I'm willing to make.
Silver lining. And then the other thing I had is just a comment on YouTube, and it's just this is the perfect way to describe this movie. So Keln on YouTube just says, rarely has a movie insulted my intelligence with so much persistence. That was remarkable.
Yeah, that's good.
Because I felt stupid in the movie theater watching it, and then I saw the Sins video. I'm like, oh, they really make you feel stupid by watching this. And it's just a shame. It's a shame, especially because the ending of Fallen Kingdom was awesome. We were like, yes, dinosaurs and humans together. This is going to be a really interesting movie. They're like, nope, they're not together. They're separated. And it's like, I hate you already. I'm ready to stop insulting listeners' intelligence by even mentioning this movie anymore. If you are channel surfing and this movie comes up, keep surfing.
Yeah. I'm going to.
Especially if you're already talking about not watching House of the Dragon season 2. Like,
seriously, that would be a bad investment if I saved some time on House of the Dragon but spent it on this movie.
Yeah, we'll go back to House of the Dragon then, I guess, because the Wednesday's video is episode 10, the finale. Ian and Jonathan writing on this script. So what are some of the stuff you had written down for this one then?
I laughed a lot at the 4 and 10 when Aaron is complaining about saying his age is 4 and 10 instead of like 14 or 13, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then he ends it by saying, I'll add 4 and 10 cents. And I was a little disappointed when the sin counter did not go up by 14, but instead just went up by 1, because he was threatening to do it. He wasn't actually.
Mm.
And I liked the sin about the dragon. Wait, so Damon is doing this dramatic speech, and he basically offers the person a choice. And right when he says the word choice, his dragon comes up from behind the hill behind him, and it's just so. And there's this really long sin about the dragon having this great dramatic timing and knowing to listen for his master saying the word choice before he shows up and appears. And then the one with them saying, looking at the camera and saying book titles, because she says A Song of Fire and Ice, and he's like, I wish George R. R. Martin would just finish the series so they at least have more variety in the book titles they could say when they look directly in the camera. So those were the ones that I liked the most and made me laugh the most in this video.
Yeah, those were all really funny moments. It was also great. Again, there's no video proof, but you're talking about the dragon coming up and you're like doing this like flailing arms, like fun thing.
Yeah.
It's like something that only we will share and nobody will ever see. Yep, the babe is coming. What babe? The babe with power? What power? The power of voodoo? What voodoo? Who do you do? Do what? Remind me of the babe. And then Jeez Renera, do you want to jinx him anymore? Maybe have him say something like, I'll be right back, or tell the audience he just has a few days left in retirement until the Force.
Oh, man. Those guys are funny.
Those are the ones I had written down, but again, like, just belly laughs for each of them. We'll move on to Thursday's video then. Edward Scissorhands. You and Chris riding on this one.
Yeti, yes. Yeah.
The original crew coming up here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got the feeling that both of you, both writers on this film, respect it, but also, like, don't think that it is aged as well.
No, I think that's, I mean, I won't put words in Chris's mouth. That's definitely how I felt. I probably haven't seen Edward Scissorhands in 10 or 15 years.
Neither have I.
If you'd asked me before writing Sins for it what I thought of it, I would have given it a higher grade than I would give it now, having gone through it. I don't think that means it's turned bad. But this movie, like a lot of Tim Burton, gets by on Johnny Depp's performance and a lot of mood. And Danny Elfman helps create that mood a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really kind of peel all that away from Edward Scissorhands, there's not a lot left of substance. There is such great Tim Burton mood and visuals and color palette. And he's just full on Tim Burton weird in this before anyone ever realized they could tamp that out of him, maybe. I don't know. It just feels like he's so free and wild making these early works. And, you know, you get to something modern day like the Alice in Wonderland movies. That's not even modern day. Those are like 8 years old now. It just feels like either someone is reining him into a certain constraint, or he doesn't have the same joy about those characters as he does for Edward Scissorhands or what have you. There's a magic here for sure. I just don't think it has aged as well as it has for others.
I think it's probably more so the latter, because I feel like Tim Burton is who he is and he's not going to compromise. And I feel like when a studio hires him to make a film, they kind of know what they're getting into. So I feel like he's always been full Burton his whole career.
Mm.
I mean, because you even look at those early Batman movies and like there's no studio interference there, especially on
not in the second one. Like I feel like the first one is they gave him 90-95% control, and then the sure. second one they gave him 100 and he was like Rocket Penguins, here we go. Because that movie is bonkers as hell. I love it too, don't get me wrong, but yeah, that's when he took the gloves off and said, okay, I'm gonna do everything I want.
I feel like studios give him the option to do what he wants to do, but like they kind of know like Tim Burton is going to do his thing. I think he's just gotten progressively weirder, and I think it's because some of his earliest weirdest stuff has been his most successful and his most beloved. But I don't know if maybe he's just lost his spark, like you kind of said, because like, I mean, you look at like this and Beetlejuice and Batman are some of his most beloved works.
Yep.
Big Fish in the conversation, I guess, too. But like, take a look at Dumbo or something like that.
And, Dumbo's terrible. If he had full control, which I'm willing to assume, then I don't feel like he was as into that as he was something like Beetlejuice. Dumbo felt like he was kind of bored making that movie. So I don't know.
I didn't see it, but I know better than to turn it on.
Yeah, it's not good. I didn't enjoy it.
I think it's probably more so the latter. Like, he's maybe trying to go weird Like, he's always tried to go weird, but I think maybe he's trying to recapture the, like, you know, Beetlejuice, Edward Scissorhands weird, but he just doesn't have it anymore. That'd be my guess. And I think similar to you, like, I haven't seen this movie in 15 years or so. I watched it a bunch as a kid, and there was a scene halfway through the video that said something along the lines of, like, we're talking about all these different plot setups, and it's like, let's just remember that this movie is trying to explain the existence of snow. And, like, it was just that.
Exactly.
Was just like the perfect sin where it's just like, this movie probably isn't as good as everybody thinks it is. It certainly is a mood and a really great Johnny Depp performance, but yep. It's probably not a great movie.
Yeah, it is trying to define where does snow come from. People forget that's how this movie begins. No, it's crazy.
It was also just fun to see the narrator go off on every little thing about that opening. And it's just like, you're trying to be Princess Bride, but you're annoying. Like, go away. Just start the movie because you're all these inconsistencies and you suck. And now
yeah, that was largely me writing most of that annoyance right there. I was out of the gate. Was like, what the hell is this?
I'll kick us off since you wrote on the script, so I'll get a chance to toot your horn a little bit here. They totally missed back in the day by not making an Edward Scissorhands, a Demon Barber of Elm Street crossover, and goes on to explain, like, you would have the most popular character from Nightmare on Elm Street in, or most popular actor here, like, you know, Johnny Depp being in the original Nightmare on Elm Street, and then sure, why not throw Sweeney Todd in there as well? And you're just like, this, whoever wrote it, you or Chris, was just like, throwing in, like, we'll throw Sweeney Todd in here too, because why not?
I think it might have been a combination, because, you know, Sweeney Todd is a barber, he's got scissors laying around, but a lot of times what will happen is one of us will make a reference and the other one will make a different reference around the same point, and we'll just throw them all into one triple reference. And I don't remember who wrote that one, but I think that one might have been, we both worked on that one to get it to where it was.
It does seem like it would be fitting for a crossover because similar, oh, yeah, like, characters and all that. And
oh yeah,
you know, he has the finger gloves things. Yeah, it's like, cool, I kind of want to see that movie now.
Edward Scissorhands could be the protagonist and Freddy could be the antagonist. There's something there.
I think he'll do it just like Shyamalan did, you know, Glass.
yep.
The fuck van argument is a lot more persuasive than I expected.
Okay, so everything about the van made me laugh. And once I started, okay, so I wrote a sin that called it the fuck van. And then we ended up, I think we make that, say that phrase three or four different times in the sins video, because this mm-hmm. dude is like, help me rob my dad so I can use that money to buy a big conversion van that we can have sex in. That's basically his pitch. And she goes for it. And it's wild. And he even, like, taunts her later when she has second thoughts. He's like, don't you want the van? And I'm like, I think that's where that sin comes in. Like, this fuck van argument is proving a lot more successful than I would have guessed. Because that is a teenage boy's fantasy. Few teenage girlfriends in high school, from my recollection, would be like, my boyfriend wants to get a fuck van? Yes! So I'm glad that you appreciated that one.
Again, phrasing of it was great, but it was also like similar how, like, we were just talking about how this is supposed to be a movie about snow. It's like, how does the fuck van fit into any of this?
It's weird.
And then, like, the narrator being so happy because, like, oh, I really thought this was a one and done. But here we go. Anthony Michael Brawl.
Yeah, because I didn't write on the script whenever that was first used. So that's Chris that probably wrote that originally and then came back and wrote it for this one. But yeah, you don't think a pun like that is going to have a second chance. And then the movie just gifts it to you like that.
That's the ones I had written down. So what is some of the stuff that I missed?
Well, I would say not specific sins, really, but one of the most frequent sins in the movie that bugged me was the way that everybody just keeps giving him food. They absolutely know he does not have any means to handle. Like, there's a couple of sins even of, like, just put this in a blender and give him a smoothie and a straw. You know, he's trying to, like, stab a pea with a single scissor. And there are three or four different instances where people try and feed him, presenting him normal human hand food, and then they just leave him to it. Nobody tries to help him. They just gawk at how awkward that guy with the scissor hands is. it's really strange. Again, I believe that's part of the movie's point, is that these people would see him as a novelty they could take advantage of, but not actually see any of his needs as things they could meet. I think that's one of the themes of the movie. But specific to food, it drove me crazy. I'm a food person, and you just keep putting peas in front of a guy. Anyway, then
it feels very reminiscent of in Castaway, where he finally gets home, and they throw a big party, and like all they have is the stuff that he's ate on the island. Yeah.
Like, exactly. Like, you don't think
like nobody thought for 3 seconds about this.
And then I like the sin. I wrote this sin, but my favorite one that I wrote was when the dad is down in the bar. And I said, you know how I know this family doesn't have a cat? These pyramid stacked shot glasses, because he's got shot glasses stacked in a little pyramid on the top of his bar. And if you had a cat, that would last maybe a half a day at most before those are getting knocked down and probably broken all to hell. I'm obsessed with in the background sins. That's why I write all the sins about the candles and too many lamps and weird stuff on shelves that don't match. And that's just a fun way for me to acknowledge my cat love, but also point out something silly in the background. Who does that? Who's that? Who has a bar at home in their basement and makes a catty corner pyramid of shot glasses that is perfectly facing where the fictional camera would be? Anyway.
Yeah, no, you have them, especially if he has a bar, you have glassware somewhere. You put it with the glassware.
Exactly.
My shot glasses are in a drawer under my bar, and they're all stacked in each other. Because I don't have a very big bar area.
I might have a shot glass. So, and it's probably just up in the cupboard with the rest of my glassware.
They're pretty common, like groomsmen gifts nowadays. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah.
Where most of mine have come.
That makes sense.
I did a whiskey decanter for my groomsmen.
Nice.
With like engraved. I was like, that's a good one.
I'm trying to remember what I even did. I'm a bad person. I should know the answer to that. I did go to a wedding once, and I played guitar in a wedding. I wasn't even a groomsman. But at the rehearsal dinner, they still gave me and the other guitar player groomsmen gifts that everybody else got. And they were Zippo lighters engraved with the a couple and the date or what have you. I was a full-on cigarette smoker at this point in my life, but I didn't want people to know that. And, well, it was awkward. I wish I had a better ending to that story. Actually, I do. I had to drive from that wedding. This is just getting off the rails, but I'm just going to go for it. I had to drive home from that wedding 11 hours from Michigan all the way down to Nashville. And we stopped halfway to have dinner at my parents' house in Indiana. And I was with my friend and his wife. And my friend's wife said, show your parents what you got for your gift. Why don't you show your parents what you got for your groomsman gift? And I was like, do you know that my parents don't know that I smoke? And I pulled out this lighter. And my dad was like, well, now you just need to take up smoking. And I laughed and put it away, and that was that.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, it's, but you can get a lighter and not necessarily be, yeah.
Like, oh, sure.
I have a brother-in-law who we had usher our wedding, and so we got our usher's gifts too, and it was one of those, maybe this is why you got those, but if I bought a certain number of decanters, then it was cheaper overall in the order, so...
Oh, I hope that's why I got that lighter. That's awesome.
So I think I wound up doing a couple extra, and then like we got one for each of the father of the groom and the father of the bride as well. And then we got one for him, the usher. And then our other ushers were underage, so we did not get them decanters. We got them other things.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Maybe it was that. But also, like, my brother-in-law like doesn't drink anymore. Mm. So I made sure to like ask my sister. I was like, hey, like, I'm looking at this. Like, is that fine? Because you can use a decanter for something else. Use it as a flower pot or
orange juice.
Orange juice. Yeah, it doesn't have to be whiskey. Yeah.
Right.
I like to think that canonize that it's because it was cheaper if they bought two extras and so they gave them to the guitarist. Yep.
I think that's it. It's got to be it.
For a YouTube comment that I pulled for this video, Fuzzy Stripetail says, this is kind of he chained together a lot of the like sins that you guys put in the video. He says, unlike the classroom in this movie, it really cut me deeper than possibly unwashed scissor hands that my childhood classroom didn't even contain one globe, thereby making me less worldly than students who had a globe or multiple globes in their classroom, and ultimately resulted in me trying to buy my first car with cookies.
There are so many globes in that classroom, man.
It was a million.
It's so many.
I also like the way that particular sin like cut to the globes, because like you don't see the globes in the shop, but then you're just like, I wonder how many globes this classroom has, and then it like quick pans, you're like, a million. So I like how that person just combined them all together, and you're he's eating food, and it's like, when's the last time he washed his scissors? Like, that was great. Man. That'll take us to Friday's video. Old Spice windsurfing. I'm going to assume Ian's on this because it's an Old Spice commercial sins.
Yeah, definitely Ian.
Yeah, I've just stopped getting the writers, and like, because it's just kind of like there's no consistency to it at the moment.
There
isn't. It's fine, but because it's Old Spice, that means it was Ian. What are your general takes on the Old Spice commercials?
I haven't seen one since they really first splashed on the scene. I guess it was like 2006 or 7, somewhere in the late aughts when they first started doing these like overly complicated sets with the cheesy guy on the unicorns or whatever. But now they've kind of like brought him back, I understand, and they're doing more new commercials with that same actor and character. But I haven't seen them since the original. I thought they were funny, but like anything, at some point, you either need to mix it up, do something new, or you're just trying too hard to recreate the same magic. I feel like that's where they got eventually, where they're not all going to be home runs. Like the cavemen. Remember the cavemen? Well, let's get off track again. The cavemen came out for insurance commercials, and they were funny for a commercial or two. And so Geico just ran with them for 6 more years, and the joke never changed. It was the same joke. That's kind of what I feel like with this. It's weird for the sake of being weird, and that's funny once or twice. But then I kind of get a little tired of it.
Geico did that. Progressive had Flow, and then they changed to like the two other agent insurance people that didn't want you to find out about like how bad their insurance was. And then they changed back to Flow. It feels like the Nationwide, I think, no, Farmers had J.K. Simmons, and he like does the whole like museum of like true stories that are freak things. And it's like that didn't live very long, but like if it lived any longer, we would have all resented it. So and it's just impossible to resent J.K. Simmons. So,
well, and what's weird about them doing this kind of thing is that so Progressive is just obviously all in on Flo and this other dude. Jesse James, I don't know what his name is. Jamie, something. I think it's Jamie. So they keep throwing those people at us because they think that is what we like when it's not. Mm. But they're actually costing themselves tons of money because those kinds of actors who get a recurring role in a national commercial, that is a lucrative ass gig. Like those are some of the best residuals you can get. So Flo, whoever that actress is, and she's in The Heartbreak Kid and a couple other films. She was an actress and still is before she got this role, but she's making bank. And it's not, I don't know that Flo is converting anybody anymore. And if you want to get into the really nitty gritty, which you don't, but I can't seem to shut myself up today. The only reason the insurance companies even do commercials like this and run multiple campaigns at once is that entire industry is all about churn. It's all about stealing one customer from the competitor with a special offer here, and then that guy's going to steal them back later. And they're just trying to stay top of mind because they know everyone is changing insurance regularly for the cheapest rate, and they're just going to remember the most recent commercial, and hopefully it'll be the one with the emu in it. I don't know.
Insurance and cell phone providers.
Yep. Exactly.
I liked the original Old Spice commercials with Isaiah Mustafa. I thought that was really fun. You know, that first one that they ever did where he's just like, yo, look at your man, not back to me, not back. Like, I thought it was really clever, really fun. That was like, to me, like a golden age of commercials because there was like that paired with the freecreditreport.com people singing those jingles. That was like the golden age of commercials for me. Then he stopped doing them and then they brought in Terry Crews. And I love Terry Crews, but I don't like him in this because all he does is yell, and I get like that's Terry Crews' thing, and I love the man, but like the original Old Spice ones were so clever, and then they were just like, let's just have Terry Crews yell, and it's like that's so primal.
Yeah.
And this combines the two of them.
Yes, it does.
All right, I love this so much. So the very first sin, it says, warning, ignore all Old Spice commercials except for this one. That's how the commercial opens up. Ian writes, taking the James Gunn approach to your commercial universe. Look, it's the end of 2022 right now, and that joke will either age like fine fucking wine or go down in flames. But if there's a 1% chance it's the former, I'm going to bat flick that chick and shit and take it as an absolute certainty. And this came out on Patreon the day after James Gunn announced that Henry Cavill isn't returning as Superman.
Oh, wow.
So, like, there's no way that the video wasn't done before that announcement came out. So, just props to Ian. And like timing for that sin is just remarkable.
Yeah, it's crazy when that kind of thing happens.
I left to comment on the Patreon for that one. I was just like, this is already like aging like fine wine, I guess. That is remarkable timing. And then Chris attempting to whistle at the end of the commercial, which is the running gag. And then Terry interrupting. He's like, God damn it, Terry. Just killed me.
Yeah, it's been fun. I guess he's been doing this for almost a year or more now, but I think Chris has just gotten better and better at doing those narrations. He cracks me up on the regular.
Did you have any notes from this one?
I do not. You covered most of the things I was going to talk about. It's kind of a mashup of what used to work and what they changed to, and there are some really good synths. That first one, that James Gunn universe, I didn't know about the timing, but that was the one I noted as worth repeating just because it seems so prescient. Because it's clearly written after he's been announced as head of the universe, but before he's made... it's really, really...
But before he's actually said anything about what that's going to mean, right?
Exactly. Like, exactly. Really fortuitous timing.
There's supposed to be a Flash movie coming out next year, and I really doubt that thing's going to see the light of day.
I think they've committed to putting that movie out come hell or high water. But we'll see.
Maybe, but that's a bad choice. And
I agree. Especially if you're going to dump the Batgirl that was a $90 million project, and this is probably a $200 million project. So you're basically saying, we're going to mothball this one and write it up as a loss for tax purposes. Mm-hmm. But this one costs twice as much and has this really questionable person in it now. But we're going to go ahead with that just for... Because we already sunk, so it doesn't make much sense to me.
It would make more sense to release the Batgirl, because Brendan Fraser is trending because of The Whale. Like, that would have been really great timing for them. And I'm dying to see Firefly in a big movie.
Yep.
Maybe Matt Reeves will finally give it to us. I'm personally hoping for Hugo Strange or The Court of Owls. I think Matt Reeves would kill either of those.
I feel like he's already hinted at The Court of Owls stuff. With the Batman. Yeah. Like, he could definitely go that direction, and I would be all right with that. But it sure sounds like he wants to do Freeze.
I'm fine with that, too, because Mr. Freeze is I think Mr. Freeze is the best comic book villain.
He's definitely one of the good ones.
Well, I guess this works as a great transition to our Saturday video, then, if we're already talking about Batman. The Dark Knight Rises, you and Chris again on this one. Mm-hmm. This video holds a very special place in my heart, because this was the very first CinemaSins video I ever saw. And I saw this thing like on a loop, showed it to everybody. I was just like, check out how funny this video is, because when it came out, like, I thought I was the only one that didn't like Dark Knight Rises. And I was like, no, like, this movie's dumb, and here's a funny video to talk about all the stupid things. The movie has more problems than this, but, like...
I've said it before, and it's probably just a skipping record at this point, but if you watch The Dark Knight Rises with the understanding that they were almost definitely going to have Heath Ledger back in the third movie as the Joker in some fashion, and then when he died, they had to pivot to some other thing... They went with this hodgepodge of a couple different runs. This is blasphemy, in my opinion, to the Nightfall series in terms of what it does to the character of Bane. I don't get that riled up about that stuff, but Bane is not just a super strong guy who suddenly knows all the facts. Bane is strong for several key reasons, and he learns the facts. Like, I don't know if you ever read Batman comics, but in the original Bane Nightfall run, like, he figures out who Batman is because he's smart. And in Dark Knight Rises, he just knows. Somebody, I don't know how he knows. Somebody told him. He figured it out. We don't know. We don't see any of his smarts.
It's probably Talia told him, right? Like,
probably.
It's got to be, right?
Oh, this is such a mess of a movie. And I've probably seen it more than anyone you know. I'm a Batman junkie. I love Christian Bale in the role. Christopher Nolan has some incredible shots in this movie.
Yeah.
I love the fight underground in the sewer between Bane and Batman, even though it's not at all what it should be if it was going to be comics accurate. It's just bloated. That opening scene feels like, as this since video said, like it had to try and top the opening scene from the Dark Knight, that bank heist, but it goes with this airplane heist crash that really doesn't matter at all. You could have kidnapped that doctor in 100 easier ways. But I do love that scene when he first comes out of retirement. mm-hmm. and drives past those cops, and that older cop is like, boy, you are in for a treat tonight, because he's seen Batman before. That whole sequence to where Matthew Modine is like a rat in a cage, and then he comes out in the bat, and you might have the wrong animal there, sir. There's lots to like for me, but as a whole, it is a huge mess. Easily the worst of the three in that trilogy. Easily the most fun to nitpick and joke about by far.
I really like the first 2 hours of this movie, but the last 45 minutes are just atrocious. Every single decision they make is, but you know, between the fake out nuke Gotham and then the autopilot thing, and I think the original Sins video addressed the nuclear fallout would destroy Gotham, not the explosion itself, but
yeah, you just made a bunch of people radiation sick, Batman,
right? And especially if Bruce Wayne was closest to it, because the autopilot, he must have ejected at some point, he's for sure dead. The Talia reveal is stupid. The way she dies is stupid. I'm not convinced Bane is dead. We've seen him survive significantly more than a shot from a bat cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much as soon as Batman gets broken, that's where the movie, I stop liking it.
Yeah, and I'm not happy at all with how he heals, because it's basically, let's put him in this makeshift prison sling. And yeah.
And just one swift punch to the spine and he'll be fixed. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be all right after that.
The other thing too about this, and I noticed this doing a binge watch not recently, is that one of the first scenes of the video says that they swapped out Gotham, Chicago for New York, and I think it's Pittsburgh if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, New York and Pittsburgh.
It is so jarring. They are nothing alike. The first two films feel uniquely Gotham, but also feel uniquely Chicago. It feels exactly how Nolan intends, but he needed a city with bridges, so...
He did. And what's crazy is that, he got away with it using Chicago in Dark Knight, even though the Joker's plan suggests it's an island city, because he talks about the bridge and tunnel crowd, which gets all these people on the ferries. Because if you've ever been to Chicago, you don't need to take a bridge or a tunnel, really, unless you're going over the river, which is one very specific section. Anyway, so that clearly is a city that has an island that has bridges, but he didn't have to shoot it. But then when you have this story that's going to blow up all these bridges around, and that's a great shot. It's a really eerie shot of those little puffs of the
mm-hmm.
bridges blow up. But yeah, it's not the same city, and you can tell. And then he goes to the Pittsburgh shots for all the stuff with the tumblers being driven around town and Joseph Gordon-Levitt sneaking around corners trying to put a tracker on it and whatnot, and it's clear you're clearly nowhere near any kind of skyscrapers at this point.
Yeah,
and it's just, you're right, it's very jarring.
It's super jarring on a binge watch. That to me kind of sums up my feelings. It's just there were so many things that worked so well about the first two, and all of it is just disregarded for the third
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the scenes from the video, I'll start with will you stop cutting away from the damn fight, goddamn you.
That was Chris. You keep hearing these reactions, but then you're actually looking at a henchman's face as he stoically watches Bane beat up Batman.
It's an interesting way to shoot a fight, but either show none of the fight or show all the fight. It could have been super effective if the only thing we saw was the henchman's reactions and then Bane breaking Batman's back. That could have been a really interesting choice.
It could have.
But the way that it's kind of half and half, it's oh, Nolan's just bad at shooting action. So.
He is. Oh, God love him.
At least in that period of his time, of his career.
Yeah.
I thought it was really funny. He's trending now because he recreated a nuclear bomb with dynamite for Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
And so it's just I saw somebody recently, you don't know how crazy this guy is. He filmed Interstellar on a melting glacier, and he built a rotating corridor, and he actually dropped a plane from the sky for The Dark Knight Rises, and he did all these things, and we've just been letting it happen, and now he built a nuke.
I think my favorite story about Nolan is that for Interstellar, he didn't want CG corn because it would look fake, so he planted...
a couple
hundred acres of corn, yeah. And then when they were done filming, sold it for a profit.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, what are some of the things you had?
I love all the scenes where I get to do a Bane voice, and you can probably assume that I wrote them, but there's that one part where he's like, "All of them is yours," and I think I do a gibberish Adam Sandler riff there. It's such a silly voice that they landed on, and some of these lines that he says are just... comedic when they're supposed to be like that last line. Oh, you've come back to die with your city. He sounds like a polite butler, only in a villain's mask and with lots of muscles. But he sounds like a very nice guy. So those always make me laugh. I like doing voices. The running sins from Dark Knight to this one, where Bruce made Alfred go to the trouble of this whole ass breakfast just because he couldn't be bothered to communicate. He does it in both those movies, where we see Alfred bringing a breakfast to where Bruce should be, but Bruce has gotten up early and gone somewhere else and didn't tell Alfred. And then another one I wrote that I never thought about. I've seen this movie dozens of times, but I never thought about it until writing sins for this version of this video. After Bane blows up the armory above the sewer, and that one tumbler falls down and lands right there, so you know Bruce can see, oh, he's got the Wayne armory. I wrote, how's he gonna drive that tumbler out of the sewer though? Is that like a throwaway tumbler, like a loss leader? Because yeah, I guess the point is he didn't know it was going to be right above the area he was blowing up, but that tumbler's worthless now. You can't use that thing through the rest of your takeover of the city. It's in the bottom of the sewer.
Yeah. And then there's even the, like, how are you going to get it out? Like, like all this stuff. Like,
you're going to break it down into parts? What are you doing? Yeah, that's all. Those are the only ones I wrote down.
I did comment the Gotham is yours, which the subtitles, by the way, read golfing and s'mores. It's just hilarious. Yeah. And then I wrote whoopity doo, flip flippity skip bebop, womp, oh, womp, billy womp, galoo. And I actually, this is the only question that like I brought to the team to prep. And this was, is the fake Bane yours? Fake Bane voice yours? You already answered that, or a random audio clip? Because it almost like sounded like you were like distant from a mic or something. Like, what did you have to do to like make that? Like, I know a lot of people like cup their hands a little. Like, what's the process?
So. I actually think in previous videos, now over 10 years, I've probably done Bane voice a dozen times at various videos, but originally, I think I had a hoodie and I would put my sleeve up close to my mouth. But now, what I've learned in the last few years through trial and error is that if you get the cadence right, people will think you're doing a good impression, even if your impression is just average. And so I don't think I do a good Bane voice on a one-to-one mimicry aspect, but if you get that kind of cadence and up and down pitch of the tone right, people will overlook that you don't actually have the mask voice. I think I move back from the mic a little bit and I try and do my best. Adam Sandler is a zombie. That's kind of what I'm going for there.
I wrote down, the idea was to be a symbol. Batman could be anybody. As long as they don't try to break up drug deals and parking garages at the beginning of the Dark Knight, they can't be Batman.
That's exactly right. Only the people that Bruce chooses can be Batman.
I already don't really like the movie very much, and not that the sins are giving me ammo for why I shouldn't like it, but like it just kind of shows the whole like, yeah, if the idea is that Batman could be anybody, then like, why did you shame the guy? Like, I'm not wearing hockey pads. Like, he's trying, dude. Like,
yeah, you wore a ski mask the first time you went out, dude. Who are you shaming for hockey pads?
You're good at that. At what? Poking a fire? Making a fire? Doing either while one of your hands is holding a rug over your boobs so you don't test the rating for it?
It's such a weird bit of dialogue. They just had sex on the floor, and she's poking the fire, and he says, you're good at that. This movie's full of bad, odd, awkward dialogue, and that's near the top, and I just felt that needed to be pointed out. What exactly is he talking about? Is there a talent to poking a fire? I'm not sure there is.
Yeah, and I think there's a talent to making a fire in the wilderness, but not in a mansion.
Exactly.
A newly built mansion, mind you. How stupid is it that this pit in the earth prison that no one escapes from, but they have cable? And then later showing that like the cable is better than, you know, my DirecTV on a cloudy day or whatever.
Like. That's the most insane television in the history of film.
A local Gotham City news is broadcast halfway across the world in a cave, crystal clear, you know?
Yep.
And then the last two that I think these were the ones that really got me. Why does Gotham even have a football team if 50,000 of its 30 million citizens can't even bother to show up to sell at a home game?
They made such a big deal out of there being 30 million people in Gotham. I've made fun of that in both Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises because that is
an absurdly large amount. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for one that has this much like crime and like not like small crimes like bank robbery. I mean, sure, there's that. But like you know, when this is the at least second time, because in the at the end of Batman Begins, like, that every single person in the city, like, people don't move, like, businesses don't relocate.
Yeah, exactly.
Why do banks open up new branches in Gotham? Like,
doesn't make any sense.
And then, luckily for Hines Ward, the explosion stopped right at the end zone, and you know what that means? 6 points. It was just
that was crisp.
That was so good. It also tied in really nicely because last week there was a DirecTV video about like flipping the commercial sins was like flipping channels, and if you flip too fast, then like the Real Housewives would be on the football court, and then they just keep playing the game. Like,
so, that's awesome.
So I was just thinking of that the whole time. I was like, game must go on, I guess. 6 points.
Yep. Can't kick a field goal anymore. There's no field.
6-0. End of the game.
Yep, it's over.
That's all I had for the video. Anything else for you for the weeks?
No. I think that covers what thoughts I had jotted down.
That'll take us to Behind the Sinner, then.
So tell me about yourself.
We're all sinners. Every one of us.
And what happens to sinners?
Get to know each other better, you know?
See, Daddy, sinners have soul, too.
The information! It's too much!
Walk away, March. Just walk away.
A couple new questions to ask you, Jeremy. Nick wants to know, is there a previously released Sins video that you were not on, but wish you were assigned to?
I know there's been one because, although these days I just lobby, right? So, Are you familiar with this movie X, the horror movie that came out
last year? Yeah, X is awesome.
I love X. But there's a scene in X where they take a break between filming their porn, and dude plays Landslide, and Brittany Snow sings Landslide by Fleetwood Mac. Mm-hmm. And then the dude plays the solo and the picking part on one guitar the way Lindsey Buckingham does in Fleetwood Mac, but that's not something this guy would be able to do, and it drives me crazy every time I see it. So I immediately went to Chris and said, I don't need to write on this entire movie, but I would like to write Sins for this scene. And so he just put me on that movie. It's like, I think a couple months out still, but I'm writing Sins. So these days I just ask. In hindsight, you know, I think I would have enjoyed tackling The Room. Chris did that one on his own because he had seen The Room and had been to the group participation screenings of The Room several times and had this intimate knowledge of it. But I think that would have been fun. And then, you know, I am glad that I wasn't on Love Actually. I have never seen that movie. I have bragged that I will never see that movie. And thankfully, Chris didn't put me on that movie so that I could keep my streak alive, because I don't want to watch that movie.
Well, you kind of already started to answer that second question then. Nick says, what's a Sins videos you're glad you didn't have to tackle? If you said Love Actually, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how about this? A film that if it gets scheduled, if it gets put on the board, that you just hope that you're not assigned to.
Well, again, see if I could go, maybe the next big Nicholas Sparks thing. This one is too close to coming, so I can't tell you what this one is, but I just did a movie, wrote Sins for it, that was like teeth grinding for me. It was, and it's a very Nicholas Sparks-ish like movie, and if I had known what it was, I would have asked to be off of it. But I did not know what it was. I did not ask. And therefore, I was scheduled for it. And I suffered. I suffered for my craft. I really don't like doing like romantic dramas or comedies very much. But I don't know that there's anything I would specifically ask to be left out of, unless it was like, unless I knew it had, like, had a bunch of like suicides in it or something, which is a subject I don't really like in movies. But again, Chris knows me well enough now that he wouldn't schedule that kind of movie for me anyway.
Okay, so then that just leaves from fan questions as well. Joseph wants to play a game of Three Sins and a Lie.
Okay.
I have Titanic, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, Battle Los Angeles, or Ad Astra.
And I get to choose one of these four?
I'll let you choose, yeah.
Oh, well, you can choose. I didn't know. This is only my second time playing the game, so I'm not sure that I am super familiar enough to know.
I have four sins here. Three of them are in the video, and one of them is Joseph wrote one that could be in the video. You have to guess the one that Joseph wrote. So those are the four ones that I have. Since we already talked about Jurassic World Dominion, let's do Fallen Kingdom.
Okay.
All right. So I'll do four sins. You have to guess which one you do not believe is in the video.
Okay.
I'll read all four, and then I can repeat them if you'd like. Wait, the Monosaurus bit off the ladder and the guy, but it had no effect on the helicopter itself? And not only that, but after seeing it happen, these motherfuckers stand around staring instead of getting the hell out of there?
Okay.
Sin number two. I know the scene is supposed to be sad as they leave the big guy behind, but I can't help but think that the pyroclastic flow, which should already be going well beyond highway speeds, should absolutely be ruining this ship's day, even if the heaviest parts get stomped, the lighter ash should be moving far faster than this tin can go.
Okay.
Than this tin can go. Sin number three. A movie about a military outfit stealing / rescuing genetically created dinosaurs from a violent island volcanic eruption might be the weirdest place for a John Deere product placement ever. And sin number four, it says, God damn it, it is not possible, even in a stupid movie, that this girl is this good at hiding with an earshot of perfect exposition every fucking time.
All right, so I feel pretty confident one in four are sins from the video. And I know that Joseph is a botanist. This feels like Whose Line Is It Anyway? So the one about the John Deere, I think number two is not in the video. That's my decision. I think number two is the one that Joseph wrote, the one about the protoplasmic flow and the tin can boat.
You are correct.
Yeah! The
only member this round to get it correct.
Yeah! Woo! I'm going to clown on my coworkers so much with this distinction. You have no idea. Oh, man. That's a fun game. I like it.
Me too. It's a good time. And I like that Joseph puts these together because he can channel the voice pretty well.
He can. He had me second guessing myself.
Well, especially when he gets to select the ones, he can be like, all right, so this is the kind of voice we're going for. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
So nice. That's great. Good job. All right. That's a lot of fun. I think we're going to keep this is the last episode of round two. And I think we're going to keep Three Sins and a Lie going during round three. But I'll have some new, probably one question to replace the first two that I asked. But one other thing, we'll talk just a little bit about cooking. You said you're a cooking guy.
Okay.
Have you made anything like recently that like is new to you or that you were like ambitious about like since the last time we talked about?
I don't know about ambitious, but I was just talking on Recotopia recording today about my new fried bologna sandwich, which I hated bologna as a kid, even today. But my dad would sometimes fry the bologna in a skillet. Yeah. And once it's fried, it tastes a lot more like bacon than it does like cold bologna. Mm. And so I was a teenager, probably the last time I had that. And then there was a restaurant near me for the last 6 months that has bologna sandwiches on one day of the week. And I was never there the day they were having them, but everybody thought they were amazing. And I wanted to try one and that restaurant closed.
No.
I never got to try it. So I said, I'm going to the store. I'm going to make my own fried bologna sandwich. I fried up an egg, a little bit runny. Put some white American cheese on some crispy fried bologna on a French bread hamburger roll with a little mustard. And it's heaven. It's heaven on a bun. I've made it three times since. And my wife, my brother, and my nephew all raved. So that was my latest experiment. And it was a raving success. I'm going to continue making that sandwich until I die.
So what, you just do fried bologna and a runny egg on bread?
With white American cheese melted on the bologna. And the bread has been covered with either butter or mayonnaise, whatever you like, and put in the skillet just to grill up a little bit. And then a little swath of mustard there on the bottom bun gives it a little bit of bite. There you go.
That sounds good. I had the same realization because I probably don't think I've had fried bologna since I was like 10. And I made some the other day, but I just put some bologna and some peppers and onions in a skillet. And it was very forgettable.
Well, you need the fried egg and the cheese, I think, to really bring it all home. So
sure.
That would
be my I also don't think I fried it long enough. Like it almost just tasted like warm bologna. Yeah.
You really gotta
get the bacon.
You gotta get it crispy around especially around the edges. And people think you want thick bacon, but you want thin bacon. It crisps up better. So there you go.
Oh yeah. I actually think I prefer prosciutto over bacon, and they taste very similar. Like
they
very
do.
Salty, fatty meats.
Yeah, prosciutto's.
I would absolutely rather have prosciutto than bacon.
I don't know about rather, but I like prosciutto. I ain't going to say a bad thing about that.
I did, again, not ambitious, but I did, I had a very busy like Thursday night and I was very hungry. And I came home and so I wanted to make something. I had my wife thaw some steaks because I was just like, we don't have a lot of groceries at the moment. We're going to go grocery shopping later today. So just, well, I have these steaks. I'll do something with that. I'll probably just fry them up. There's nothing wrong with just a steak. But I got home and I'm like, but I'm hungry. It's 9 o'clock at night. I hadn't eaten anything all day. So I'm going to do what I know. I'm going to turn this steak into Ramdan. Which I talked before last time about how saying that it's great. But I wanted something different than just the traditional. So I used a different noodle, which I realized that like Ramdan is just steak on ramen. So like seasoned the right way or whatever. And two specific ramen packets. But I went with a different ramen packet this time. Have you seen these? It's like Buldak, B-U-L-D-A-K ramen noodles.
I have not.
It's also, I think, Korean. It's very spicy. A lot of people, like, it's been kind of trending on TikTok because they're like, these are really great, like, ramen noodles. Like, it's got great flavor. They're just really spicy. And I would agree with both of those. It's got really good flavor. Doesn't taste like ramen, especially like the Marchuan or anything like that. It pretty similar to like, you know, if you just make the nigiri by itself. It's really good flavor, but it's really hot. So I wanted to tame a little bit of the hotness. So I added some butter because I was also making mac and cheese at the time.
Nice.
And I was like, butter should tame that. So I added some butter to the buldak and I just did the Ramdan cooked steak on top of the buldak noodles with some soft boiled egg. And that was, I wish I would have not stirred in the steak with the noodles. I wish I would have kept them separately, but ate them together because then I just had steak coated in essentially like hot sauce. And I wish I would have like had the steak flavor and the sauce like separate.
Yeah. Still sounds pretty good though, man. Still sounds pretty good.
Anything else that you've tried or want to rave about or promote that you have cooked recently?
No.
Or something you've seen that you're like, I want to try this out.
Not so chili. God, I've never made chili. I'm inching closer and closer, and I'm probably gonna make some really bland chili for a while until I start honing my specific sound and flavor profiles.
This isn't food, but I've been experimenting with different alcohols recently, and so I had to make a new batch because I ran out because it's so delicious. I made my own amaretto.
Oh wow.
Amaretto is just flavored vodka. It's really easy to make.
Okay.
And amaretto is not expensive to buy either, but I bought a bottle of Tito's, and Tito's isn't typically my go-to. I don't really have a go-to vodka. All vodka's meh. It doesn't really taste like anything. That's kind of the point.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really like vodka. I like things I can taste. I like gin a lot. Gin's my spirit of choice. So I ran a bottle of Tito's through a Brita filter to clarify it more. To make amaretto, you have to essentially make a brown sugar simple syrup, but you don't get it thick enough to a simple syrup. You just, you know, heat until it's like combined well. You don't need it to be like sticky. And then I think I bought like a standard bottle of Tito's, like a 750 milliliter. I think it took 4 cups. Mix 4 cups of this brown sugar water mixture. And then you add almond extract and you throw a vanilla bean in the bottle.
Okay.
And then you let that sit for 7 days and now you have amaretto.
Nice.
And it is delicious. It is so much better than the store-bought stuff. And not that the store-bought stuff is bad, but you can like, you can control how much vanilla you put into it. So the stuff that I have like comes out very like, vanilla is the biggest thing that you get out of it. It's delicious. So
interesting. Sounds very good. Very adventurous.
Yeah. Anything that you've tried recently that hasn't turned out so great?
I tried to get a cheeseburger pizza from my local pizza place. Like I tried to make cheeseburger flavors. And so I got hamburger and then red onion, and I chose to have them put cheddar cheese on. That was the mistake. Cheddar cheese and pizza sauce do not mix super well. And I remember saying to my wife, I will never do this again. And we actually went back to that pizza place a couple days ago, and I got straight up pepperoni because I wasn't playing around. Yeah, I've had cheeseburger pizza at places that was good. I just don't know what they put on it. And trying to make
it's
got to
be something different instead of just red sauce, right?
I think it does. Yeah, I think it's got to be not white sauce, maybe even an olive oil base, but that red sauce really doesn't work that well with the cheddar cheese.
And then, what is one piece of advice that you give to somebody in a kitchen, like that somebody that's relatively new that they're like maybe looking to explore some things? What is, out of your years of experience, what is the best advice you have?
All right, this is the same piece of advice I give to people who want to write a book. not only be willing to make mistakes, but embrace for the mistakes and long for the mistakes, because the only way you will improve is learning. And you can only learn so much through success. And the lessons are much stronger when you learn through failure. This is the same advice I give people trying to learn how to get around the roads when you move to a new city. You take some guesses. I wonder where this road goes. And you find out where that road goes. And it may be helpful to you in the future and it may not. But eventually you'll have kind of a knowledge of all of these roads. And so that's where I'm at. I make one bad dish for every five or six good ones. Maybe it's even a higher ratio than that. But I've learned from every bad dish. I try and analyze, well, where did this go wrong? Which flavors aren't working? Was the temperature too high? Was the cook too long? But, you know, if all I ever did was succeed at everything I tried, I'm not going to learn everything that I want to learn in the kitchen. And it probably means I'm not taking big enough risks. So there you go. That's my advice.
Really good advice. Take risks and learn from the mistakes. Don't be afraid to throw something out if it doesn't work. You just make it better the next time.
Exactly. Yeah. If my alma mater ever asks me back to speak at graduation, and they won't, I will say, I've already got my speech written, and I'm not even joking, but it's called I Hope You Fail and Fail Often, because I really do think that's where the best lessons in life come from, is you try something, it doesn't work out like you planned, but now you've got a key piece of knowledge you didn't have before you took that chance. So
The one advice I have for somebody in the kitchen is quality over quantity, specifically in terms of knives. Like, if you're going to buy a kitchen gadget, like, buy something nice, right? If you want a stand mixer, buy a KitchenAid.
Right.
If you want an air fryer, buy a nice air fryer. If you want spices, like, go nice on the spices. Don't get the store brand stuff. You know, don't get the cheapest stuff you can. Get the expensive stuff. If you like vanilla flavoring, vanilla beans are remarkably better than vanilla extract or vanilla imitation vanilla. Mm. Get vanilla beans. The price is worth it. But specifically with knives. I moved to Iowa City and I bought a $20 knife block at Target, like the cheapest one you can. And they're fine for a 20-year-old. But if you actually want to do some cooking, I got a $150 knife block off of our wedding registry. And it's game changing.
Yeah.
And maintain your knives. You have to sharpen them depending on how much you use them. You have to sharpen them every now and then.
This is true.
And one knife block should be able to get everything that you do. I have a knife block and a cleaver because I wanted a cleaver.
Cleavers are kind of awesome. I don't have one, but they're awesome.
I don't use it for anything, but I have one. Anyway, quality is really important, especially in knives.
That's good advice. I like it.
Now, just one last segment before we move on. Beyond the Sins.
To infinity and beyond.
Somewhere beyond my wild history.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Jeremy, what's that? Any one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to recommend, warn, or recommend?
We'll go with Pinocchio, the Guillermo del Toro stop motion film that's on Netflix now. It's not going to follow all the same story beats as the animated Pinocchio or the Tom Hanks Pinocchio from earlier this year that you might have seen. It's more closely adhering to the book. I have not seen a movie this visually stunning in years. And that may be because I know going in that it's stop motion. And so every time I see something on screen that does not compute with stop motion, my brain catalogs it as beautiful because impossible. But it's leagues beyond any other stop motion film I've ever seen in terms of the attention to detail. And I really, really liked it. It's got great original song, great voice work. So that's probably what I'm recommending to people most this week.
I've heard two things about this film. First of all, is that it is the new and likely front-running winner for Best Animated Feature for all the film categories, for all the film awards. Which then my wife was like, does stop motion count? I'm like, yes, it's animation.
Yep, it counts.
So I've heard that this is the front runner and likely will win. The other thing I've heard, Dicer was talking about this on SifPop, and he said that they would specifically animate mistakes because when you do stop motion, you have to do however many shots per second or per frame. When you do that, you have to be very precise with everything that you're doing. And so there's a moment in the movie where a character goes to shut a door and it doesn't quite shut. So he goes back and shuts it again. Mm. And normally they would not want to risk that. But he's they're very intentional about animating it with mistakes, even though they manually did the stop motion. And so I'm really intrigued.
Yeah, it's I really liked it. We all liked it. My brother and my wife and I watched it together, and it's going to be fine for your kids and family. It's not super dark or anything. But yeah, really good, really beautiful.
Nice. Would you like to hear about a recent movie or TV show?
I would like to hear about a movie.
All right. Me and my wife are trying to get through some 2022 films, and we were in the mood, and so we watched Michael Bay's Ambulance that came out.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
I love this stupid movie. Look, I remember lots of people when it came out were talking about like getting like motion sickness and migraines in the theater, and like I'm probably glad I didn't see it in the theater, but I had a blast. It's up there with the best Fast and Furious movies, like in terms of like how like the fun that you can have with this. It's I'm not saying it's a great movie, but there's some really interesting camera work being done. There's really attempted but failing character work being done, as is a Michael Bay movie, but yep. I just had a blast. This movie is like 2 hours and 20 minutes, I think, and I was biting my nails the entire time. I was stressed out. It is an anxiety watch. So
it is. I would compare.
You've seen this one?
Oh yeah, we saw it at Cinweek. So we saw it with.
Oh, that's right.
This was our Cinweek choice. There's some really interesting drone work that I really enjoyed.
Uh-huh.
And Jake Gyllenhaal is having so much fun. I don't know what he's doing, but he's having so much fun that I enjoyed.
Cocaine, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, I enjoyed his performance a lot because he's going for it. And yeah, I get why people like this. It does not really ever stop. It's just adrenaline for two straight hours, essentially. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy the film. But
no.
I see what is there for people to enjoy. So
like there's a thread of a storyline where like the lead prosecutor, like the head of the police, is like, I'm going to take over this case because I went to college with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he went to school not to study how to be a good guy, but how to know what the good guys are going to do. Like, and like, that's a really interesting thing. But then like the fact that they went to school together has no bearing on the rest of the movie. No, other than it's like, there's a really smart movie in there somewhere. And instead this is just a really dumb, really fun movie. So,
yeah,
well, that'll do it this week. Thanks Jeremy for hanging out. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Anywhere that you want to promote, for people to connect with you. I mean, you're,
sure.
I think starting to move away from Twitter.
Yeah, well, Twitter's
should.
Going down in flames. I'm still there, but if you want to see what I am posting, which is still mostly cat pictures, I am doing some of that on Instagram now, and it's at jscotttn2. jscotttn2 on Instagram. So we'll see you there.
Somebody took the original jscotttn.
Apparently. Who knows?
You can check out me on Twitter, letterboxd at Schweitcastle. If you want to send feedback on the show, or if you want to send like, hey, this sin was really interesting and I'd like to hear the crafting of that, or is there a backstory behind this sin, send any of that to bts@cinemasins.com or DM the CinemaSins BTS Twitter at CinemaSinsBTS. And lastly, don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening to, and come back not next Thursday, but 2 weeks from now for more Behind the Sins content. We're having a Christmas break for next week. So we'll see you right back here in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to bts@cinemasins.com and be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Find more ways to connect by visiting cinemasins.com/BTS.
And reminder, like, it's not saving video anywhere. So
excellent. So if I feel like getting up and dancing, we won't blackmail me with it.
You go for it, and nobody will. I won't even have proof. So
there you go. No one will ever believe you. I'm a slut for kitty cats. I like cats.
Nice. That'll definitely make the outtakes.
Aim to please.
I was actually just talking with somebody recently, last night, that we just need to move Thanksgiving to like first Saturday in June, because it's way too close to have two big food holidays, because as soon as really you finish is. Celebrating Thanksgiving, you gotta like start prepping Christmas. I mean,
yep.
You should already have your Christmas presents bought by Thanksgiving, but now you gotta start planning another big food for 30 people, you know.
Yeah it's too close together for sure. I need them both to be in cold weather, though. I don't want Thanksgiving in the summer. They're both cold weather holidays. Let's move Thanksgiving to like
late February.
I live in Iowa. March. It's still cold in June.
that I'll give you.
And I thought about, like, what about, like, July? But I'm like, oh, I got 4th of July. I mean, that's kind of like Thanksgiving for American. Well, Thanksgiving for Americans is Thanksgiving, but...
Still, it's a little bit more American. Maybe you can cut that part out. Not the apology, but the mistake. I'm losing my words. Jeremy, use your words.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.